Well, I have been working for quite some time now on preparing music for these CDs. And in the process of doing so, I have to continuously deal with my dissatisfaction with a particular expression I may have made. Expression could have been something I sang, or could have been something I played. I listen to it very critically, and I feel if I like it or I don't like it, or something that makes sense to me or doesn't make sense to me, and so on. Now, I know that there are often difficulties in everybody's life. Everybody has this feeling about their expressions. And because of that, I wanted today to speak about expression. In fact, expression is an essential part of life, to express oneself. This is something we struggle with our entire lives. If you just imagine the difficulty a child has, a small baby cannot express itself, cannot speak about the fact that it feels too warm or it's too cold or it's too hungry or it hurts, it wants help, or it wants company. Each of us, we're in that situation of frustration from birth. We are unable to express the way we feel. We're unable to express our needs. We're unable to ask for help. So the only thing left for us, the only possibility is that we cry. We cry out. And when it becomes even harder to get a response, we cry louder. This is our methodology of expression. Now, if you think about that, there are many factors involved in that, which are very interesting. Factors in relationship to how we learn to express, how we feel that our expression is heard. In fact, I would consider that a lot of the that we all have stem from these early experiences when we are crying out to be heard. If you think about the various things that really appreciate, the things that we really value for ourselves, is to be acknowledged, to be appreciated, be accepted, and to be respected for who we are. Now, if you just consider our original experiences as a child and our desires to express, naturally, there will always be some difference, some problem. There will always be some problem between the what we want and what we are getting. Some difference there. No matter how good your parents are or how good you have a surrounding, they will never be able to 100% understand everything about you. Okay, maybe some parents, some mothers especially, are very psychic. All mothers are psychic, but are very psychic and have this connection to such a degree that they understand very well about you. They understand what you need, what you want. They understand this very, very well. Now, that's not the rule, but it's possible. But you can understand how from the very beginning of life, we develop these challenges to our self-respect, to our self-feeling of security, our feeling of being safe, the feeling of that we are appreciated for what we are. These challenges come at the very beginning. If you look at the things which are most important to every individual. For example, I am an individual. This is one idea. I am an individual. I am a self. I exist here. I am important. And then beyond that, I'm safe and secure as this individual. I am loved. I am loved for what I am. And in that situation, I fit within a group. And within that group, I'm respected, I'm loved, I'm appreciated. And because of my situation, I get what I need when I need it. If you examine the literatures of Michael Newton and those who follow Michael Newton, you will see these discussions about what happens to us after death, where we meet up again with our group. We meet up again with that particular group that I fit perfectly within, where I'm loved and respected and appreciated, supported so much that my friends within that group, that spiritual group, continuously take birth with me and I with them, support each other, have the goals of life of each other accomplished, where we feel this incredible connection to each other. Now, this feeling we have in that between lives experience is the feeling we expect to have when we take birth, because this is our most recent experience, and we bring it with us into the womb. And in the womb, and it's highly debatable when we wake up, so to speak, or when our consciousness expands in that womb, at what period of time. But in that womb, we feel a similar feeling. We feel safe. We feel secure. Unless our mother has psychological problems or is being stressed in a manner which we cannot, we don't find compatible, we generally feel safe and secure within that womb. We feel loved. We know that we get what we need when we need it, because it's being automatically delivered through the umbilical cord. So you come from that in-between lives when you're together with your group. You enter into a body of your mother. You feel the same kind of security. But then you take birth. And all of a sudden, from one minute to the next, the entire situation has changed. And you are faced with an environment that is not necessarily maintaining these feelings. You may not feel so loved. You may not feel safe. There may be things around you which are frightening. And you can't express yourself. You can only cry. And even that crying may annoy your mother. It may annoy the mother that she has to wake up every 2 hours and feed you. And she's got one eye going this way, one eye going that way, and hair disheveled all over the place and disheveled. And you will find that these feelings that you had are challenged. These feelings that you had in that between lives, the feeling you had in the womb, it's now all of a sudden challenged continuously. As you struggle, this challenge becomes the exercise we have to do in life to develop what we are, to develop that muscle, that spiritual muscle, that evolutionary muscle where we grow and we develop and we become more of what we are. The next best, the next better version, the next better improvement of what we are. Now, one of the most significant of all of the challenges is expression. Learning how to express is one of the most significant of all the challenges. Let's discuss, just to contrast this, expression from the point of view of an ideal and from the point of view of that which challenges or is an obstacle to attaining the ideal. Now, I'm not saying that my definition of the ideal is the definition. It might not be. But it's the definition that I think is a very good one. Otherwise, I wouldn't tell it to you. Anyway, with that in mind, I think the ideal of expression is to come to the point of simply expressing the self, expressing the essence of my being, what it is that I am, my essence. For example, when I make music, some of the tracks, they're expressions, but they're not expressions of my essence. Actually, very few of the tracks are. One of the tracks on the new album really expresses what I consider to be my essence. In fact, it's the only one probably I've done in a long time. But there are different expressions I can make. I mean, I can express myself from that type of energy or this type of energy. After all, we are complex as beings. We are multifaceted. There are many sides to us. So we can express in different ways. And in reality, these are all expressions of the self, of the essence, of the essence that we are, our being. This being is, we call it personality, but personality, it kind of is the wrong word, because personality can kind of mean the way I appear to others. But personality means personal. And personal is not really related to how I appear to others. It's really, truly related to that which is me. If it's personal, mine. It's what is me. Now, that expression is of my feeling, of my energy, of my will, of my desire, of my wishes, of my goals, of my spiritual energy. Ultimately, it is expression of my essence. What it is about me that makes me, makes you. And ultimately, if you can say that, the goal or the ideal of expression is to simply express the self, that essence. But there's a little bit more to it. Because that expression should be, and when I say should, I don't mean it in the must. But since we're speaking here about an ideal, that expression should be without consideration of gain or without that expectation of gain. For example, if I speak to you with the desire to gain something from that speaking, it's not really an expression of essence. All right, there are some exceptions. For example, if I wish to express to you in a way that you will understand me better, or that you will be able to understand my essence because it's what you wish to do, then there's some idea of gain in the sense of your understanding expanding. And that's good for me. Because everybody wants to be accepted for what they are. As I've said many times and will continue to say, if you want to hate me, then do it for the right reasons. Hate me for what I am, not for something else. Now, of course, that's a backwards way of saying it. We should really say it. You should love me for what I am. But love is not artificial. Some people don't like other people in this world. In the spiritual atmosphere, the spiritual energy, that which is within the energy of the supreme, of the divine, there is naturally a feeling of love and compassion and companionship with all living beings, because we share that energy, we vibrate, we resonate in a similar fashion. So in the higher sense, we are simply expressing in a manner which is a true representation of our essence. Now, again, if we speak about higher sense or lower sense, this is not necessarily relevant. But when we express on the, if we are, for example, connected on the spiritual level of being, we don't have to worry about expressing to have others understand us, because on that level, we instantly understand the being of others. It is not that when you are on that level, which is beyond the situation of the body, of the gross limitations, you instantly feel the energy of others. You instantly have a picture of their being. It is not something you have to struggle to do. It's not something that depends on their capacity to express. On that spiritual level of our spiritual energy, comprehension of others is not a task. It's not a struggle. It's part of the definition. It's part of the characteristic of the individuals. Their essence manifests automatically. Others accept it automatically. You cannot hide. You cannot lie. On this realm, it's interesting that we have this capacity to lie. To lie to get what we want. We learn this very early. We become challenged because our honesty of being and expression, which is natural for all of us, becomes compromised very early in life. It becomes compromised by the obstacle, by the challenge, where we feel there is an expected behavior of us, expected responses, and we have to make the expected response. We have to fit within an established environment, an established social order. So our considerations now move away from this expansive being that has embraced other beings, feeling of the divine oneness of all of us, of spiritual energy, where that loving embrace is automatic. It is within, inherent in all of our existence. We now have to withdraw from that and accept a very insulated, egoistic, self-centered idea where we have to divide ourselves from others so that we can act in an expected manner according to their expectations and what it is they expect. No longer is our expression or our acts natural and flowing. They are rather edited, restricted, placed within a certain kind of path and direction, which cause us to create what we are according to others' expectations. Now we wish to be accepted, appreciated, acknowledged, and respected the same way, because these things are important. But instead of it being according to what we are and the energy of the universal cosmic love, it is now within the context of, to be accepted, I have to be something that you want, you like. If you appreciate me, then I'm really appreciated. If you acknowledge me, then I'm really acknowledged. If you respect me, then I'm really respected. This is the idea we have. It's created in this realm, in this world, very early in our lives. And when we are not very advanced in our consciousness, we actually accept that this is so. Just like if you tell your dog, good dog, your dog feels good because he's a good dog. So when we are young children, if we are being told how good we are and how really we're just so appreciated, we think, yes, that's so. But at one point we see through, not that we see through the sincerity of other people's expressions, but we see through this as having value for us. I'll explain. Even a great movie star, a musician, or a political leader, or whatever, who has unlimited amounts of this acceptance and appreciation, acknowledgement and respect, doesn't feel that these things give them what they really wanted. It's external. It's not based on what they are. It's based on their having succeeded in expressing themselves in a manner which other people want. It is not necessarily expression of themselves. And therefore, because these things, to be accepted, appreciated, etc., are so essential for our being, because this is the nature of the way it is when we are no longer on this physical realm, we are not satisfied by external glorification. Or if you examine, for example, artists who are true to themselves, who painted, for instance, in a manner which was revolutionary, groundbreaking, unique, they basically were not gaining that success for their art until after they died, or until after they were very old or discovered or whatever. Very rarely do they get that real appreciation for their expression of themselves. Now, it's counterproductive to us to end up in this situation. Let's examine a little bit more on how expression can really be something dynamic. I have broken down the way in which we are into four categories. Not necessarily that these reflect all our existence, but really this is specifically in regards to our expression. I see it like this. In the beginning, when we really start to act according to this vision, where we get this vision, where we get this idea that we have to express. Now, we start off by emulating. We start to act like others. Imitation. Imitation, actually the real word's emulation, but for the sake of the translator, we'll use imitation, means that we go about our lives trying to do things the way our heroes do it. Maybe our heroes are our parents. So when we're first in the very early stages of school or whatever, we imitate the way they are. We imitate the way they talk. We imitate the way they act. We imitate the way they are in relationship to others. This continues because as we grow older, we may imitate the most popular girl or boy in the school, or we may imitate someone we saw on TV. We try to be like them, dress like them, act like them. We have our heroes in whatever field they may be, and we imitate. In that move, we also start the next stage, which is learning the technique. The imitation is one thing, but you have to imitate it by learning the same technique. Do it really well. So we polish the technique. We work on it. We practice it. It's a discipline to learn the technique. Be like others. But then, just learning the technique is not enough. You have to do it with style, with a flair, with flash, with pizzazz, with some kind of spark to it. So your imitation and your technique are so good that you just stand one step above the crowd because you've got real class in your technique. But you're still imitating, but now with including your own style that makes that imitation one step above the crowd. But when you really get it together, then you start to innovate. You take what you are, you take your intelligence, you take all that you have learned, you take all that you have established in your own style, and you go even further. You innovate. You become a leader. You create something that other people imitate. You can see these stages in music, for instance, in art, in science, in medicine, in all fields of life. We go through this because that's just the way life is. You want to do something, so you imitate it. You learn it better. You start to do it with your own particular style. And then when you're really, really good, if you ever get there, you innovate and you become a leader. Now, this is a really difficult way to do it because you have to go step by step through the illusory obstacles. Just consider this. You start off in between lives totally in this being, totally in this situation where you're just expressing as you are without any obstacle. And then you're born in the complete 180 degree different situation, and you have to spend your entire life getting through that, struggling to get through that, to get to the point where you can innovate. And when you're innovating, you're expressing your being. Isn't that interesting? It's almost as if when we take birth, we're being forced upon us, we're being influenced with the outside-in mentality. The outside-in mentality tells us that, okay, here you are born, nice to see you, but we know what's right, and we're going to impress upon you, force upon you existence from the outside in, that this is what you are, this is what you shall be, this is what is right, this is what is good. And then you have to struggle and struggle, and only very few get to the point of the inside-out expression, where they are expressing their being according to what they are without accepting the outside-in demand. Very few. It's a very, very difficult situation. It's a very, very difficult life. It's a challenge. It's a challenge. Let's just review again. You start life as self-centered. You move outward in your consciousness to friends and others. And in that movement, you get lost in all the external affairs of life. Now, at this point, there is always at one point a desire to return to the self, to find yourself. Sometimes this happens when you're about 19, 20, 21, where you're just struggling to find yourself. That's why at that age, it's a very good time to get people to join sects or other groups, because they are idealistic and seeking out to find themselves in relationship to a group which they think will express what they are. Either that, or people can become absorbed in hedonism. Hedonism is a very complex activity that has a lot of connection to this desire to just really experience for the self. Because this pleasure really expresses that feeling. They feel that pleasure. That's a very important thing for people who have a hard time with feeling, or people who feel they have been very lost in externals. Part of this idea is also based in the greed and exploitation that takes place. Greed and exploitation are not necessarily related to hedonism, because what they might give you is a lot of money, a lot of control, a lot of those things which may allow you to enjoy or find security or or find what you want by buying it or controlling it. But later on, there has to be a symbiosis between the self and the world. And that may come by force, or that may come by choice, or that may come by a combination of the two. For example, getting married or having relationships or children, a family, forces this symbiosis, this interconnectedness, this need to work together, to nourish each other, to make a team. You're by force having to merge the desire of the self with the desire of the group, or the need of the group, or the need of others. You might be able to avoid that, but age, old age maybe, or diseases, or disasters, or crises will force one to reach out for and accept a mutually beneficial relationship or assistance from others. But these are by force. By choice, what is most important is that we accept these relationships, we accept reaching out for others because we appreciate, we love the energy of this being. We appreciate and love this connection, this communion, communion in relationship to the community, of the communing with others, of feeling the communal love, the communal support, the communal appreciation for others, what they are. Now, considering all this in our struggle to express ourselves, even if we are at that stage where we know that we should do it, we want to do it, and we consciously have the capacity to do it, still need the vocabulary. The vocabulary. My cousin uses this word when he speaks about improvisation. If you want to do a lot of improvisation with others, you need to have a big vocabulary. Because when you're speaking with a lot of other people, or if you're going to do it for some long period of time, you have to have a lot of tools, a lot of riffs, or a lot of understanding of the tonality and the rhythm and the way you can combine each and every aspect of it instantaneously. It's called a vocabulary. And you have to learn the vocabulary of expression. You have to have tools, just like when I'm speaking here, I'm expressing. But I have to have the right phrases, the right words, with the right definitions, express what I'm thinking. Because if what I am thinking, or the way in which my consciousness is flowing, is different from the words that are coming out, I get all screwed up. You may notice that sometimes I say something and I go, ugh. I don't go, ugh. But my mind goes, ugh, wrong word. So I run that back, you know, like on the fishing pole, run that back. Whoa, wait a minute. Fix that. That didn't say it. That was wrong. Because I hear it. So I hear that word and my mind just gets all out of shape. So therefore, I can't continue. The expression was splattered across the room by something completely wrong. We have to wipe it clean, fix it, and then move forward. So it's essential that we have the vocabulary of expression. That what we are saying, what we are doing, actually, truly represents our being. And therefore, we need to learn or to develop the skills in our expressions. How do you do this? You do it by practicing without fear. Because after all, if you're afraid of making a mistake when you express, then your entire expression is covered in fear. And if you make a mistake, and you'll just withdraw and become filled with anxiety and say even less because you're afraid Your fear has been fed by an error. So to conquer fear means that you just accept that I am what I am. I can't be anything else. If you like me for what I am, fine. If you don't like me for what I am, fine. I shall be what I am, and that's all I can be. That's all I can do. This confidence is I am good enough. I don't have to be something else. And when you have that confidence and you can understand what you are because you're freed from the fear that colors what you are, that insists you be what other people expect, then you can very easily understand others, understand what they are, see through their fear, see when it's fear talking or when it's love talking. These are very interesting concepts. And when we are in contact with that essence, the essence that we all share in our own individual ways, but it's the same essence that we all share. It's that same group essence of being that is this universe. This universe is not something separate from us because we share our energy with it. We all contribute to that universal being essence. We are part of it. It's our contribution. And when we appreciate that and accept our importance as a contributor to that universal energy, which cannot exist separately from us because we are contributors to it, its entire existence depends on our contribution. But of course, that's not a great way to say it because it just is. It doesn't depend. But you know what I mean, I hope. If you don't know what I mean, then that's another lecture. But anyway, it's easy to choose what to do. It's easy to understand what is best. It's easy to love without fear when you see that broader picture. So the challenge in life is to always be seeing that broader, to always be seeing that aspect, that overriding fundamental core of existence that is holding us together, which is giving us that what we are, that strength and essence of being, and which is filled with that love which can nourish us continue. I think that the supreme beings are always facilitating our efforts. I have seen this time and time again. I have seen how these wonderful divine beings are continuously urging us to develop our freedom from fear and loving capacity to express according to our essence. Because when you're freed from fear, you can love. And it is that love which is the foundation of all good.